This is Donald Harvey Marks, and I'm going to read to you an introduction and beginning chapter for my dangerous medical fiction, Vera Martina. Dr. Richard Alton Bates needs to recruit a partner for his growing internal medicine practice. He contracts with a headhunter who, in his zest for a sale, fails to perform an adequate background check. Dr. Vera Martina, Richard's new partner, soon appears on his doorstep, accompanied by acrimony, odd and disturbing idiosyncratic behaviors, and the unexpected deaths of several patients and staff. The closer Richard looks into Vera, with her violent thoughts and bizarre hobbies, the more imperiled his own life becomes. When you arrive at this section of Vera Martina, you will understand why the subtitle is When the Patient is Not the Sick One. Vera Martina is interpersonal medical fiction at its best, and will appeal to anyone who has contact with medical professionals, nurses, office staff, paramedics, administrators, doctors, and most of all, patients will immediately recognize all these characters, their bizarre actions, and perhaps relate to their sometimes irrational emotional behaviors. You will be left wondering, what is fiction, what actually occurred, and just what the author left out when describing when the patient is not the sick one. Vera Martina, Dangerous Medical Fiction by Dmitry Markov, read by the author. Chapter 1. It's negative, Dr. Richard Alton Bates whispered to himself softly so as not to be overheard, and then once again, this time with more hope and life in his voice, as if trying to convince himself. A specialist in internal medicine in his late 30s, affiliated with Haven General Hospital, Richard cautiously studied the small yellow lab slip clutched in his hands, nearly oblivious in his intense concentration to the constant turmoil of the ER indifferently swirling around him. If truth be known, Richard had already desperately reread these terse few words and cold numeric values on the lab paper several times, starting with the actual reading, then the upper and lower limit scale, then the indifferent computer-generated interpretation that had, up to now, so completely controlled his life's future. Numbers, though, weren't alone enough to quell Richard's long-suffering anxiety or restore belief and confidence in the future, his future. Instead, Richard compulsively started reading at the top of the lab slip all over again before he was willing to believe or even accept the meaning of those impersonal test results. At this point, he was too far into simple relief to experience true joy at his good fortune. Hopefully, that might follow. Thank God it's negative, he sighed to himself. 5'11", about 170, with light brown hair, intense brown eyes, and a serious demeanor, Richard, as he liked to be called in non-professional situations, displayed a presence more friendly than imposing or striking, and not one generally stereotyped of his stay at medical profession. Fast approaching 40, he still managed to work out for 30 minutes several times each week, ate moderately, and maintained his weight, or at least he tried. He used any means at his disposal to stave off the relentless ravages of flesh's natural decay, just as he tried to accomplish professionally for his patients. Yet, for the last several months, Richard had been feeling anything but the control and calm self-assurance he seemed to so easily project. "But I could have been killed," he remembered, as a shiver ran up his body. It was only 4 months ago since Richard had suffered a particularly worrisome accidental needle stick during an unusually messy cardiac resuscitation. That CPR was both unsuccessful and a strictly pro forma exercise on a homeless man brought into the ER from the streets. As Richard now reflected on the entire unfortunate incident, he could kick himself for having been so careless as to allow so potentially dangerous an injury to happen to him at all. "Damn, how stupid," he muttered. As a member of the Hospital Infection Control Committee, hadn't he spent enough considerable time cautioning the nursing staff against just this sort of careless event? Yet, in all fairness, Richard couldn't think of any way to prevent such accidents from occasionally occurring, short of a change in careers, and that, he knew from experience, he could ill afford. Risk followed him without mercy. Risk was his karma. One of the postmortem lab tests on the deceased had come back positive for hepatitis, although the test for the even more deadly human immunodeficiency virus, HIV, was, thank God, negative. The worry had been that the test could be a false negative, and that would require waiting another month and retesting the patient, who was already dead, and retesting of Richard. HIV infection was a death sentence, a slow one, but a certain one, both physically and professionally, and yet was paradoxically feared more than the only occasional but rapidly lethal hepatitis virus. The negative lab slip now grasped in his hands like God's true written words, finally pronouncing Richard free of both HIV and hepatitis after so long an agonizing await, was the equivalent in its liberating significance to a governor's last-minute reprieve from a condemned man's death sentence. "It's negative," he nearly sang out with joy. Now he was free, at last, to concentrate on longer-range issues like keeping his precious medical career and living past next year. The accidental needle stick had, in fact, been Richard's second such incident in only 8 months, and the seeming trend was worrisome, as the ER's budget at their suburban hospital was cut once again, and at the same time, more people out of necessity used the ER as their primary care clinic. He could only assume that the working environment and thereby circumstances would become more hectic and coincidentally and unavoidably sloppier. He was dodging bullets again, only this time more subtle ones, and there was little room for heroism. And no bulletproof vest either, he had little need to remind himself. Massive and faceless and ageless, Haven General Hospital, where Richard admitted all his patients, had faithfully stood for over 50 years as a fortress against unrelenting disease for the masses of Haven, New Jersey. Its constant structure served in many ways as a paradigm for all that was the best, and at the same time much that troubled the ever-emerging medical care system and medical science itself. The never-ending patient flow into Haven's bowels was as continuous as the discharge of bodies, living and dead, from its ever-open doors. As he looked around where he now stood, inside that veritable temple to medical science, Richard saw hallways and ramps echoing continuously with the clatter of gurneys and ambulances and the anxious chatter of hectic families and the moans and hopeless pleadings of the sick and the dying. He saw the familiar faded green paint covering walls in a constant state of deterioration, splattered here and there with plaster and blood and vomit and scratches of human and mechanical origin. The dim lighting imparted a surreal visage to all unfortunates within its walls. The background smell of urine and disinfectant nauseated him only for the first few minutes inside, and then forgivingly faded away into unnoticed bittersweet ether, along with the biting crackle of overhead speakers and text messages and ambulance and police sirens. Comfortably at home among these sights and smells of life and death, Richard slowly walked down the crowded emergency room corridor. Catching his name being paged on the overhead speaker, Richard walked over to the nursing station, picked up the telephone, and called the hospital operator. It was his new partner, Vera Martina, answering his earlier page. "Yes, Richard, what can I do for you?" Vera said, with only the barest hint of annoyance in her voice. "Hi, Vera. I thought you'd want to know that the ambulance called to say they were bringing in one of your patients. Since you're not on call, I thought I'd ask if you want me to handle it." It was customary for partners to cover each other for hospital problems when the other was off call. "Thanks for the offer. Did they say who it was?" Vera asked. "No. They seem to be in a big hurry, though. I don't mind taking it since I'm already here." "Thanks, but something tells me I better go in on it to see this one. See you in a bit," Vera said as she hung up the call. Not being primarily ER doctors, Richard... and Vera had the option of coming in to see their own patients who sought medical care in the ER after hours, or leaving their patients' care to the omnipresent ER staff. Still, Richard knew full well that in today's tight patient market, he just about had to interrupt whatever he was doing after hours and run down to the ER. Sometimes he felt no better than an overly aggressive used car salesman. Distasteful and unprofessional as that realization was, that thought debased to the very core his precious medical self-concept. But Richard knew he had to be practical about this, for he realized that failing to acquiesce could well end up being just the type of bad move that could cost him a paying patient. Whether that was for that reason or another, he could well understand Vera's choice in coming in to see her inbound patient. And he probably would have done the same. It seemed to him uncanny how similar the actions around him now seemed to that fateful day several months ago when Richard had last suffered a needle stick. He, too, had only been notified of the arrival of an unassigned patient, nothing more, and he came to the ER before completely knowing all the circumstances, just as Vera had now. Still, had Richard known that his new patient had been a homeless vagrant, without medical insurance, and potentially HIV positive, what really could he have done differently, short of refusing to care for the patient? But none of the affiliated physicians actually had that choice, by the hospital's own regulations, to select patients in that manner. If the patient had his own doctor, that private doctor, as a courtesy, got first opportunity to assume care and thereby billing of the admitting patient. The ER doc also had the choice of admitting patients through the ER to the hospital under the doctor's name and onto their own medical service. Patients to be admitted without their own regular doctor were given the less desirable term, unassigned. The unassigned, usually the uninsured poor, like the untouchables of low caste in India, went into a rotating pool of local doctors who were obliged to accept these typically indigent patients. Certainly, Richard had developed over his professional career respect for the particular risks inherent in working the ER and in the hospital in general. He was as careful and methodical as circumstances would practically permit. Yet, the dangers of contracting an infectious disease were omnipresent. Many times he felt like a proud tightrope walker, refusing to entertain the possibility of falling and foolishly declining the demeaning offer of a safety net. Richard tried not to concentrate on becoming infected or on the many other vicious little risks in his chosen line of work. Burnout, attacks by violent patients or their families, nuisance lawsuits, annoying reimbursement inquiries, or an early death. Otherwise, such preoccupations would grow from mere distractions into self-fulfilling prophecies, tragically transforming him into an embittered and resentful man. He had seen it happen to others, and he wanted to avoid burnout happening to him. Although Richard's first blood test, taken immediately after his accidental needle stick, had fortunately turned out negative, that in itself had been of little solace for purpose of being little more than to establish a baseline. Everyone knew that Richard would not yet have zero converted from that needle stick, as a change from normal to positive blood tests was termed. As fear overcame reason, people for no logical rationale gradually began to keep their distance from him, at least those few who knew about his particular problem. The second blood test, 1 month later, was also reassuringly negative. Now, an additional 4 months later, a third blood test was negative again. This confirmed that, in all probability, Richard had not contracted either the slow but inevitably lethal and contagious HIV or hepatitis infections. He had to admit that he now felt a tremendous sense of relief. Not happiness, really, for happiness would be too much to expect. Just cool relief. He had the test results tragically been otherwise, Richard really didn't know what he might have done.